Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we are just getting underway in March Madness this week on the college basketball side. Also have a good bit going on the college football side with spring practice underway, and also we'll do some NFL previews. But let's get it started with some college basketball. Get our first caller on. Hey, Bobby, how's it going?
Hey, Colin, good. How are you?
Doing pretty well. We'll also get Andrew Beverly on. Hey, Bev, how's
What's
it going?
What's up, man? How you doing? Doing well. How about y'all?
All right, good stuff. We'll go ahead and jump right in. We've had a lot of mid-major conference tournaments this week. Some great games, actually. A few buzzer beaters already. And then
go Coastal.
ACC games. But one takeaway from this is, one, that these mid-major teams, as we know every year, can really do some damage in the tournament. Bobby, if you had to pick one mid-major team, and I'll even give you teams like Northern Iowa and Gonzaga, those programs, if you had to pick one mid-major program that could really do some damage and go the furthest in March Madness, who do you think it would be?
I don't think that's a debate. It's got to be Gonzaga. I mean, no other team out of the mid-major group, if you're including, you know, Gonzaga in the mid-major group, no other team's a top 10, top 6 team in the country. Gonzaga is. They played a much tougher schedule than the rest of the mid-majors. They've beaten NCAA tournament caliber teams. They have players that have experience in the NCAA tournament. They have the perfect combination for Gonzaga of an inside-outside combination. You know, they have three big guys, and Sabonis and Wiltshire, who are kind of defensive mismatches, the way that they can kind of stretch the defense with Wiltshire especially. And then you have three-point shooting with Bell and Pangos. So, I mean, I don't think it's that much of a debate. I think we'll all be in agreement that if you're giving us Gonzaga, you take Gonzaga.
Without a doubt.
In terms of the ranking, they're the highest ranked. But then you also have both Northern Iowa right now and then also Wichita State have both spent some time in the top 10. So it's not like these are unranked programs. Bev, do you think that the ranking is a little – you think the ranking is too high for those teams?
I think they are.
You can go ahead, Bobby.
What was the question? What was the question? Kind of cut out there on my phone. Sorry about that.
Do you think that it's more that if we are in agreement that Gonzaga is, you know, far and away the best mid-major, do you think that Northern Iowa and Wichita State haven't really earned their top 10 rankings? I know Wichita State's out of it now, but they're right there in the 10 to 12 range, whereas Gonzaga's 7. It's not like that's a huge gap. Do you think Gonzaga's underrated and those teams are overrated, or is it closer than that to you?
Okay, I think Bobby was talking, so he can go ahead. Sorry for cutting you off.
Oh, no, I thought it was direct to me. Yeah, I don't think Wichita State or Northern Iowa are nearly close to the same category as Gonzaga. You take away the AP coaches' polls, which are somewhat of a joke to begin with. You kind of look at where people are being projected to be seated. Northern Iowa and Wichita State are maxing out at 4 seeds. Gonzaga, while it's a stretch to be a 1 seed, they're at least being talked about. I think they're cemented into a 2 seed. Wichita State has 1 win over a tournament team. That's against Northern Iowa. So, they're just not that good. They're not close to top 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, if we're saying it's not even close between Gonzaga and those teams, Bev, can Gonzaga win a national championship this year? Are they that good?
I think it's possible. I don't think they're going to do it. I think it's possible mainly because I think they just line up well against anybody. I mean, their mismatch is all over the place. They're ridiculously experienced. I mean, the best player on their team, Kyle Wiltshire, already won a national title with Kentucky. So, I mean, he can – so he's been there. He knows what he's doing. Kevin Pangos is a great point guard who's definitely going to step it up. Gary Bell Jr., who's finally, you know, playing like Gary Bell Jr., because he's, you know, he's kind of let me down the whole year. He's really stepping it up. Little Sabonis is really good. I mean, I think he's like a projected
–
I don't know if it's for this draft or the – yeah, I mean he's what, like a top 15 pick?
Yeah, so it's scary to think about the talent they have, especially with Kyle Wiltshire. What if Kyle Wiltshire were still a Wildcat and he was just added to that Kentucky team? It would be ridiculous. Another one of the blue bloods playing pretty good basketball right now is Kansas. They won another Big 12 championship. Bobby, if we were to take the Jayhawks out of it, you're not allowed to pick them, but there's a whole lot of other choices in the Big 12. You had to pick a winner for the Big 12 outside of Kansas in the tournament. Who do you think it will be?
Can I preface it by saying I wouldn't take Kansas anyways?
Sure.
Because I wouldn't. Because Perry Ellis isn't playing, or most likely not expected to play. Cliff Alexander is not expected to play. They're kind of beat up. And the way the Big 12 is this year, that's not good to be right now. I made the projection today. I think it's going to be Baylor over Oklahoma. To me, it's between those two and Iowa State, just because they're really starting to take form down there in Ames. With they have the system that Hoiberg's always kind of had, that fast tempo, the NBA style play. The difference is they have a big guy this year in Jameel McKay. Play a little bit of defense on the inside. They're not as soft as years past. I still like Baylor just because of the way that they rebound the ball, the way they play defense, that zone. If a team goes cold, I don't know how you stay in the game against them. I like Baylor, and their depth, too, will help them in this type of, you know, they'll play their fourth season, they'll play three games in 3 days. I'm picking Baylor over Oklahoma.
Yeah, you actually had an article today on Today's U that listed your predictions for all the conference tournaments, so definitely check out that, and I believe Baylor was your champion pick in that one. And about a week ago, you also had an article saying that Baylor is one of three teams that you listed that could be Kentucky, so they have that size down low. So Baylor's definitely a dangerous team. Bev, are you taking Baylor in the Big 12 too, or are you going somewhere else if you're not allowed to take Kansas, which it doesn't sound like at the moment a lot of people would do anyway?
No, I'm not picking Kansas for the same reason Bobby said. And, I'm with him. I actually think Baylor is playing well. I know that Texas game was kind of but, you know, Texas had a hell of a lot more to play for in that game. And the one guy who should have gotten ejected from that whole entire thing ended up hitting a game-winning shot, which is hilarious to me, but enough about that. I think Baylor plays defense. They're really, really good at it. They grab boards. They're a good team. And then I think I like Oklahoma. I haven't watched a whole lot of Oklahoma, but from what I've seen, I like how they play all around. And Iowa State can just light it up, and any team that can light it up can win. The defense isn't that great, but they can shoot. They don't turn the ball over. They're smart. And I like to watch them play.
Yeah.
So for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, there's some entertaining athletic teams in the Big 12, no doubt. Bobby, you made the point in your article today that there's not a whole lot of difference between Kansas and West Virginia, which is, you know, middle of the pack, basically, in the Big 12. They definitely have some quality teams even into the middle of that conference. We'll go out west now, talk about the bubble a bit, as opposed to these teams that are going to be some of the top seeds. Stanford is a really interesting team because, you know, everybody's thinking that the Pac-12 is down this year. It's kind of top-heavy with Arizona and Utah. But Stanford's trying to sneak into the tournament as well. Bobby, how many games do you think Stanford needs to win in the Pac-12 tournament to get into the tournament, the NCAA tournament, that is? Or do you think they just have to win it outright in order to get in?
Yeah, they have to win every game because they're not that talented of a team. It's not the same 3-16 team as last season. They finished, what, sixth in the Pac-12? I know they're
I think they're four.
So they're, you know, fifth or sixth, which, again, the Pac-12 isn't that good this year. I mean, the two seed in the Pac-12 just kind of got over the bubble into, you know, Oregon should be secure in. So you're talking about a weak conference. Stanford, I mean, they have what looked like a good win at the time at Texas, but that's that's kind of irrelevant now. So they don't have kind of like that signature win that a couple other bubble teams can kind of hang their hat on of, hey, well, look who we beat, you know, look what we did here. I think they really have to win it all just because the Pac-12 is so down.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely lacks the depth this year. If that's the case, Bev, and Stanford has to win out to go in, is it really that the Pac-12 is only a three-bid conference this year? That does not sound like a major conference number. In fact, there's some, you know, quote-unquote mid-major conferences that are strong this year that will probably get that many in. Is the Pac-12 this year basically a mid-major conference to you? You there, Bev?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I don't think you can say that because they have Arizona, and to ever say that Arizona could ever be in anything that you could call a mid-major conference regardless of year is just not even, like, I'm just not okay with that. The Pac-12 is down. They shouldn't get more than three teams in.
Maybe four. I could see UCLA. Four, I could see.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, and they could. I'm just not impressed with UCLA at all. I think they underachieve. I think they've been underachieving for a long time now, and they just anger me. But sorry.
Well, as a USC Trojan, I'll agree with you on that one, but that's beside the point.
Yes.
As far as the other conference tournaments go, Bobby, like we said, you had a breakdown of what you think will happen in these bigger tournaments. Which team, though, do you think has the most to gain in terms of winning their conference tournament? You had an article as well on the number one seeds that really need to win in order to cement their seeding in the NCAA tournament, but what team has to get the win the most, do you think?
It's Villanova. They are kind of the fourth number one seed, and it kind of seems like they're the fourth number one seed by a little, I don't know if you want to say by a decent amount, because I think they'll easily jump Virginia, who I think is the number one seed right now. But Jay Billis said it today on the SVP and Russillo show, that if Villanova loses, they're not a one seed. They'll drop to a two seed. So they have the most to gain because they'll secure a number one spot. And if they win the Big East and let's say, a Notre Dame or North Carolina or Louisville win the ACC, now Villanova gets shipped from, instead of being the one seed in the West, they're now out in the East or the South, staying closer to home, and don't have Arizona as your two seed. So to me, Villanova is the most to gain because it's for them, it's winning in or losing. You're dropping to a two seed.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely see some shakeup between the one and the two line, just because, as you mentioned, Kentucky's kind of the only lock for a number one seed right now. You think if Virginia and Duke wins the ACC tournament, that's got to be a lock. But Bev, do you think there's any non one seed, or I guess what is a non-number one team in the conference tournament that has the most to gain in their turn? You look at could be Utah that fell to a three seed. Some of these teams that maybe fell off the top line in their tournament but now have something to prove in their conference tournament. Anybody you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I mean, I think Utah is one of those teams. I think if they can win, especially because they would have to beat Arizona, I think they can move up to a two.
Don't you think they can move up to a two, Utah? Okay.
I don't think Utah can go up to a two.
Even if they win?
Even if they beat Arizona?
Who are they? Are they going to jump Arizona? Arizona's 2-1 against them then on the season.
Oh,
I mean,
that's a good.
And then, you could say, okay, if Kansas loses the Big 12, but then you can't have Iowa State or Oklahoma win, because then they would jump from the 3 to the 2. I just don't know who they jump. To me, there's a clear 7 that are going to be in the 1 and 2 seeds. Actually, I think you got the top 8 figured out. It's Kentucky, Virginia, Villanova, Duke, Arizona, Wisconsin, Gonzaga, and then pick your Big 12 team.
Yeah.
You don't.
I can't see Utah jumping to a 2 seed without a lot of help.
Okay.
Yeah. Anybody think Maryland is more deserving for one of those 2 seeds? I mean, this is a team that 26-5 in the Big Ten, which is right up there, is one of the best conferences. Nobody's really thinking Maryland can get a 2 seed.
I think they're kind of in the same boat where they're locked into a 3 seed no matter kind of what happens. I don't really see them falling to a 4. And I don't see him rising to a 2.
Yeah. Even if they win the Big Ten.
Again, who do they jump? Are you knocking Wisconsin down to a 3?
Yeah. I guess that would be the argument.
Yeah, Kansas, but I think Wisconsin's resume is a lot better.
You could make the case with Kansas if they don't get healthy and they lose early. Kansas, I think, could be jumped.
Again, but what about what if Oklahoma wins the Big 12 tournament? Do you give it to Oklahoma or do you give it to Maryland?
I think body of work, you'd have to go Maryland just because they've been
in the plot
consistently. Yeah, and then
both are 3 seeds in their conference, and the Big 12 is better than the Big 10. Or is Maryland the 2 seed, Michigan State the 3 seed?
Right.
But
I think that's the case. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Maryland's too.
The next 4 days will be chaotic on that end, of course, for all these seedings.
Right.
With all these bubble teams playing early round games, clearly there's a lot of teams that have a lot to lose right now. Bobby, is there a team that you think has the most to lose right now in terms of these early round conference games possibly getting bumped off the bubble?
Yeah, there's 2, and you guys can probably guess what I'm going to say. And it's Indiana and Texas, because if they lose, they're also out of the bubble, and it's probably an improvement, but they'll probably lose their coach as well.
Do you think
Tom Crean is gone?
I mean, as a Kentucky graduate, every Kentucky fan wants him to stay. That's honestly what everyone says.
Yeah.
Please stay. But I don't know how. I mean, he made a couple improvements early on, kind of took over a program in shambles. But what has he done? I mean, he's celebrating a Sweet 16 when he was a 4 seed. Okay, so he played the seed. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You did what you were supposed to do.
And then underachieved.
I don't think
when
I don't
he had
think
a 1 seed
fired,
and didn't know how to play against his own defense.
Yeah, I don't think he would, but I think you'd hear a lot more chatter about it if they were to lose a Northwestern tomorrow.
Yeah. I don't think that's happening, though. I think they –
they lost them already this year.
Yeah, that's true.
I agree
so
with
more talented.
I agree with those 2. I was thinking you were going to say, when you said 2, I was thinking it was going to be Indiana and Miami, because Miami is barely outside.
Miami is the other one.
Both accounts, and they gained absolutely nothing in that game against Virginia Tech. Bev, I know you were hoping it would be Wake Forest and not Virginia Tech, but there's a late game.
Yeah, almost cried.
A few late game misses there. Bev, do you think it's for Miami as simple as beat Virginia Tech and Notre Dame, you're in? If not, you're out? Is it that cut and dry? Or is there a chance if they win against Virginia Tech, lose to Notre Dame, other things can happen, they get in?
I think, I think if they can beat Notre Dame, they're in. I think they should be in. I think they have a decent resume on the season. They have some good wins. I mean, obviously that Florida win doesn't look good anymore. The Duke win is still extremely impressive. Pour some out for Florida, guys. Pour some out.
Do they have a chance, though, if they beat Virginia Tech and lose to Notre Dame? It seems right now they're right on the bubble. Is there any way they basically play to seed and get in?
I think they need some help.
You're
really holding your breath on Selection Sunday. You can't say they're definitely in if they win, or you can't say they still need to win one more. That's going to be one where, okay, we played the seed. We really need other bubble teams to lose early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Bobby, you would say that, but we're kind of all in agreement that if Miami beats Notre Dame, they're in.
I would assume so, unless the bubble just completely shrinks. You know, you get, let's just say, I mean, for the sake of argument, out of multiple bid leagues, let's say, you know, 75-60% of them get snatched up by someone who wouldn't be in the tournament, then I think you're kind of in the same predicament we talked about. But barring that, I would assume that you should be in as one of the last four.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Do you guys think any of these mid-major regular season champions that have really good seasons but lost in their conference tournaments could get in? I think the best case you could make is for Murray State, which jumped into the top 25 right before their conference tournament and fell in their tournament final. Bobby, do you think there's any mid-major out there that lost the conference tournament that could sneak in, or is it they're NIT bound no matter what?
There's three that come to mind. You mentioned one in Murray State. And it's tough because they might get overlooked, but Iona and Green Bay are two other teams that I would look at. Now, Green Bay didn't win the Horizon League regular season. Valparaiso did. But Green Bay is a pretty good team when Kiefer Sykes is healthy. I would look at those two. I think they're long shots to get in. I think they'll kind of be on that next four out, maybe even right after that. But I think they're at least worth, if you're in the committee, you know, bringing up and saying, all right, let's just take a look at their entire body of work compared to, you know, Indiana or whatever. I do think it's a long shot, but I would look at, you know, those three come to mind in Murray State, Iona, and Green Bay.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked to see Iona fall to Manhattan, and that's a big rivalry game. They won the first two meetings and then couldn't get it done when they really needed it in the final there. So you hate it for teams like Murray State and Iona that really sort of proved to be the best team over the course of a whole season and just couldn't get it done in the turn. So there'll be some nervous moments on Selection Sunday. Bev, we'll go back to the major conferences. I know you also follow the NBA a good bit. Who is going to do a Russell Westbrook on championship week in the coming days in the college game, and just not just be a star, but really get people talking about that team being able to make a run in the tournament because of a single player?
Well, I assure you that nobody will be a Russell Westbrook, because Russell Westbrook is just superhuman right now. He is probably what he's doing is absolutely incredible, and I think people need to basically worship him because of what he's doing.
UCLA would be what? Off the bubble if you were back there, right?
Wait, what was that?
I said UCLA would be off the bubble and in if you were back in LA.
I think that would be a pretty safe assumption, yes.
Yeah.
In terms of players, I think that, and I guess he doesn't really count because everybody knows he's really, really good. I think Melo Trimble could be one of those players because, I mean, you know, Melo Trimble and Des Wells, but everybody kind of knows who they are. I think who else?
It's not like we're
I think Justin Jackson of UNC could do some stuff.
See, I'm going to go Marcus Paige. I think Marcus
what?
I was going to say Marcus Paige. I think North Carolina makes a run to the ACC championship game. And I think Paige puts up 20 a game. You know, kind of he's shown he can get the triple double or come close to it. You know, I think you'll see a couple games where he goes 28-4. You know, things like that. And I think Carolina gets the ACC championship game. Other one that I was going to say.
But isn't he already kind of a household name? I mean,
I don't know if there'll be any new name that kind of jumps out. You know, I predicted in the Big 12 the most outstanding player would be Taurean Prince from Baylor. But again, if you kind of watch college basketball, you kind of know who he is. I don't think there'll be that new star born during championship week, so to speak.
We're not going to get like a Steph Curry or you know, anybody like that, or like a Gordon Hayward or anybody like that. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't looking for necessarily a role player who's just going to break out, but somebody who can carry their team. And what has happened in past years, you know, we've had a couple national champions that have won the conference tournament and had a huge showing by a particular player and then just gone on to run through the NCAA tournament. Of course, the most
recent
one.
Who can pull like a Jerry McNamara a couple years ago when they were the eighth seed in the Big East?
Jerry McNamara.
For me, it's Marcus Paige and Buddy Hield. I think you're going to see Buddy Hield explode in the Big 12 tournament.
Mm-hmm. I can see
that. Yeah, I can definitely see Buddy Hield. I also like, I mean, you can take your pick for between LaDonte Hinton and Chris Dunn. Providence. I love Chris Dunn, man. Yeah.
And the name to watch, if you want the role player name to watch, Trevion Blewett from Xavier. He's a fresh wing player, can go inside out. I predicted Xavier to go to the Big East Championship game as sixth seed. I think Blewett will be the role player that can kind of be the, if you want to call it, a breakout star.
I could definitely see that. All right, we got just about a minute left. Just do a quick take from each of you. Who is going to be the biggest snub on Selection Sunday? Biggest snub for you, Bobby.
Biggest snub? Oh, God.
That's a tough one.
I'm going to say, I'm trying to think, who is it going to be? I think it's going to end up being, man, that's tough. I think it's going to end up being, I'm trying to think of a mid-major that I think is good enough. I don't know if there's really a snub yet that's coming to mind. Maybe Texas. If they lose and you know, you just think Texas is talented enough that they'll get in, maybe they make an argument for a snub, but I don't know. It's hard to see snubs without a conference tournament finished yet.
Right. Yeah. It's a ways into the future, even though it's only a few days. Bev, who's has the biggest heartbreak on Selection Sunday for you?
Let me think.
I mean, we basically talked about the squarely on the bubble: Texas, Indiana, Miami, UCLA. Any of those are good.
Oh, have we established that BYU is definitely in or not?
I don't think they are yet.
Yeah.
What?
I think it depends on this week. They could definitely make a case if they're snubbed. I mean, they did almost everything they could except for beating Gonzaga in the finals and then having a stronger schedule. So, yeah, that's a good call. All right, thanks, guys, for being on the Today's You podcast today. You can find both Bev and Bobby on Twitter. Bev is at Andrew_Bev, and Bobby is UKLefty22. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you all.
All right, let's get going with some college football here. Get our first caller on the line. Hey, Dustin, how's it going?
Hey, going well. How are you, Colin?
Doing pretty well. Also have, Stephen Sheehan on here. Hey, Stephen, how's it going?
Doing well, Colin. Calling you right outside of the Florida field, so it's good to be on the podcast.
Nice, good stuff. You've had a bunch of good pieces the last couple of weeks on Florida. They need to improve, but I'm sure the buzz there is a positive one with Jim McElwain coming to town. We're gonna try and do. Yeah, we're gonna try and do a little bit of a different feel here for the college football section, and just kind of do a spotlight on some of these guys who are coming back and decided to return to school instead of the NFL, and then some of the conferences who are strongest heading into the NFL draft. Dustin, you had an interesting article that went on FanRag Sports about how the SEC may be coming back down, but it's not like the SEC is going anywhere, and it just might be tougher given the format now of the college football playoff for a conference to dominate. That being said, they're still extremely talented. Do you think, Dustin, that the amount of talent each conference sends to the NFL draft should be part of the criteria in terms of labeling the best conference in the country, or is it strictly in the college game, wins and losses in bowls and in the playoffs?
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I think there's some validity behind that. I think when you see the SEC and places like Alabama, LSU, Auburn churning out NFL caliber talent on a yearly basis, I think that should be noted. However, I think it's more based on success at the college level. I think that, you know, I look at a school near where I live, and that's Purdue. I mean, these guys, it's a school that's turned out several defensive linemen, but yet nobody's even thinking about Purdue as one of the elite programs, even though they do turn out some pretty good defensive talent on a pretty regular basis. So I think there's some validity there. I think it helps the conversation, and I think it helps get the SEC the type of caliber talent, those 4- and 5-star recruits that do eventually get to the next level. But I don't think when you talk about what the best conference is, I don't think it's necessarily who the best players are. I think you're looking at the best overall team and what that team does in a given season.
Yeah, I think it is interesting that you do have these programs that are, you know, some smaller programs that still will have some really successful draft picks and NFL careers. Even from developmental programs like a Wake Forest, you have a guy like Kevin Johnson this year who's going to maybe be a number or a first-round draft pick. Steven, do you think it's as simple as these, you know, linebackers are SEC linebackers, they've played that physical style, so it actually helps them in the draft because of their conference? Or does it really just come down to the fact that the SEC might recruit the best players, therefore they're highest on these boards? Is there any relation between the fact that they are coming from the SEC and that physical style of play in terms of being higher up on boards?
I think there are certain positions where playing in the SEC certainly benefits as far as your resume, as far as the top level of competition. For me, the difference between the SEC and pretty much any other conference really comes down to the trenches, where the offensive linemen and defensive linemen that play in the SEC are traditionally bigger, stronger, faster from an earlier age. I mean, when you look at the draft this year, a lot of those top edge rushers are guys that are coming out of the SEC. Dante Fowler from Florida, Shane Ray from Missouri, Daniel Hunter from LSU. And even on the offensive side of the ball, on the offensive line, you got guys like Lyle Collins, DJ Humphreys again from the SEC, AJ Cann, arguably the top guard from South Carolina. So to me, the big difference in the SEC when you talk about that physicality is just that the SEC in general recruits a lot of guys that are just better athletes, bigger athletes, you know, coming straight out of high school. A lot of them can play right away. And eventually, you know, it's easier to project guys like that to play well at the next level when you know that they're facing guys that are NFL caliber versus in the Pac-12 and some other conferences where the offensive linemen are a little smaller. They're not facing guys that are necessarily going to be blocking or trying to rush the passer at the next level. I think that's where the SEC, you have a little bit more credibility if you're in the trenches because you know you're facing NFL caliber competition.
Yeah, it seems to be a matter of in the trenches. A lot of times the SEC dominates those positions in the NFL. The position players are, I guess, a little bit more distributed because, you know, you've great receivers everywhere, whereas they just get some big bodies up there for the SEC. Dustin, recently we've had some pretty big names return to college, surprise people by not going to the NFL. You look a couple of years ago at a guy like Matt Barkley returning for a senior year. Then across town, you had a guy like Brent Hubley this past season. A lot of people were surprised. Who is the biggest surprise of this offseason, I guess, that you've seen returning to school and foregoing the NFL draft?
Well, there's three guys that I was surprised of, and two of them probably aren't really that well known unless you're a diehard Rutgers or Colorado fan, and that is Leonte Carew, the wide receiver from Rutgers, and then also Nelson Spruce, the wide receiver from Colorado. The reason I thought those two, they were two of the top receivers in their conference and nationally. They were juniors. They were highly touted. They were expected to leave and be pretty good prospects in the NFL draft. And they're going back to schools where it's not a dominant program. It's not like these teams are going to be competing for national championships next season. I mean, Colorado won two games last year, and this guy caught, you know, over 1,000 yards and 12 touchdown passes. So, it's kind of wonder why he's going back, maybe to if he thinks he can improve his draft status, if he thinks, you know, next year maybe Colorado may have a shot at a bowl game or maybe able to compete a little bit more. That was interesting. The Carew situation, obviously Rutgers played really well, getting 8 wins this season. We'll see what happens next season. And then the third guy I thought was Cody Kessler. I thought for sure he'd be headed off to the NFL draft. But, you know, then again, USC is still building their program back. There's a real shot that they could be in the talks of a college football playoff berth and a real shot at a national championship. So that one didn't surprise me. I think his talent may need a little bit of tweaking as well. So not as much as a surprise there, but Leonte Carew and Nelson Spruce, the two wide receivers, were a bit of a shock to me.
Yeah, you can see why some guys would come back trying to win a national title. Matt Barkley, as I mentioned, tried to do that. Didn't turn out so well for him. But you do like to see guys who come back really just to get better and to try and refine their games more and be that much better for next year. Steven, are there any guys from the SEC you were surprised to see come back just because they were pretty high up on draft boards?
Yeah, there are a few names that come to mind, especially at the linebacker position. When you look across the SEC, quite a number of talented linebackers who decided to come back to school next season. You know, right here at Florida, Antonio Morrison is a guy that was talked about as a possible, I would say, top 100 prospect, certainly a guy that would be available maybe in the third round, fourth round area. He's coming off over 100 tackle season, an all-SEC type of player, but ends up coming back to school. Some people might think that has to do with him injuring his knee pretty badly in the Gators bowl game. So he came back along with Jonathan Bullard, who was an emerging defensive lineman. That might be a better decision for him just because he'll be able to be the star up front now that Dante Fowler's leaving. Also at Alabama at the linebacker spot, Reggie Ragland is a guy that I thought, you know, he only had 1 year of really starting production, but I think considering his pedigree, he was a former 5-star recruit, tremendous size, physicality. I think he could have probably left and still have been one of the top inside linebackers off the board. And then finally, I think when we're sticking at the linebacker position, at the University of Georgia, there are two outside linebackers, Jordan Jenkins and Leonard Floyd. Both were rumored to be considering entering the draft. Jenkins just finished up his junior season. Another top former recruit, Leonard Floyd, finishing up his redshirt sophomore season. Ultimately, probably a good decision for Floyd to come back. Jenkins is a guy that pretty much has been the same type of player, put up very similar stats all 3 years. Thought he might, you know, kind of jump to the NFL because if you saw one of the recruiting pieces, I'm sure that people have seen on today's U, Georgia reeled in a ridiculous recruiting class in terms of front seven talent. So I'm not saying that Jenkins is going to be pushed out of the lineup, but he's definitely got to face some competition this year because they have a ton of guys that are capable of rushing the passer that are coming in to be Georgia Bulldogs this season.
Yeah, the SEC has been kind of cyclical the last 5 or so years where they had these dominant defenses. In the last couple of years, they've really had some pretty high-scoring offenses. I don't know if I see that being the case in 2015 with all the talent on defense coming back. It seems like on the offensive side of the ball, a lot of teams will be run heavy as well. So I could definitely see the SEC going back to more of some defensive battles that were classics a couple years ago. One of the biggest decisions about a month ago is when Cardale Jones decided that he was going to come back A lot of people thought he might go, even though he just played three games. Because he won the national championship, he clearly has the physical tools to play at the next level. Dustin, who do you think of the three quarterbacks that Ohio State has, and Urban Meyer said recently he still has no idea who the starter is going to be, but who of those three has the most NFL potential to you?
I think the one that's the most NFL ready right now, without question, is Braxton Miller. However, the one with the most potential, I think, will be JT Barrett. You know, that's an interesting question. I guess we'll see how it all plays out to see, you know, if Barrett retains the starting position or if Braxton Miller can come back after a year of injury. And he's been riddled with injuries throughout his career, but he's still got very good mechanics. He's still a very smart football player, and I think he's probably still the lead candidate. He's not the one that's on everybody's mind. Everybody's going to be thinking JT Barrett. I think with what he was able to do, put together a Heisman Trophy season and basically get all that together in a month or two prior to the season with Miller's injury. So Cardale Jones is still really raw to me. I don't think he's developed much. And I think in those three games that we saw him play, the Big Ten championship and then the two playoff games, I think we saw more of how talented Ohio State's receivers and then running back Ezekiel Elliott were to kind of helped him along the way. If they didn't have these talented guys and a really good offensive line, they would have struggled in those games. So Cardale Jones, I think, is still out of the mix. But Braxton Miller, maybe in a year or two, I think he's got the most potential short-term. And then JT Barrett, I really like the way he can develop and come along. So I think he, in the long run, would have the better NFL career.
It's interesting that you say in terms of NFL-ready, Miller, Barrett, Jones, just because that seems to be the smallest of the largest. A lot of times people equate size as a big factor in terms of guys who can impact the NFL game immediately. And Jones is just such a huge guy. Steven, would you go the same way and thinking that the guy with probably the most experience is the most ready? Or would you go with somebody else maybe in the long run in terms of potential years down the road?
You know what? It's a really nice problem to have because here at Florida, we can't even find one capable quarterback. We've had to deal with John Brantley and Jeff Driscoll for the past few years. So I wouldn't mind to be an Ohio State fan in that regard. Ultimately, I think that Cardale Jones obviously is going to intrigue NFL scouts just because of the size that you talked about, the arm strength, some of that mobility that we saw during his little stretch there. But, I mean, it's quite obvious he's not NFL ready. Even all that talk following their championship that he could possibly enter the draft after literally starting, like, three games and be a possible second- or third-round pick, I mean, that just wasn't going to happen. It's not realistic. I think it's too early to really make any conclusions about him. I mean, Braxton Miller, people forget about him because he was gone for the entire year, but this is a guy that was a two-time conference player of the year. I mean, it's really hard to write him off. But again, like I said, it's a nice problem to have because, you know, if one of them's now, if Miller comes back and shows some rust, they can obviously fall back on a guy like Barrett who showed it over a longer stretch. And then obviously you have Jones as well, who I think has a lot of NFL potential, but it's just way too early to really say anything definitive in that regard.
Yeah, you never know with Miller if he can graduate this spring, if it doesn't look like he's going to win the job. He might take a gander at Florida, so who knows? We'll have to wait till at least the end of spring. We're going to focus almost solely next week on the spring practices and the upcoming spring games that start early April, a couple late in March. So we'll get plenty of that next week. But just a quick take from you guys before I let you go. Dustin, if you could watch one spring game in April, which team would you go watch play this spring?
Oh, that's a good question because there's about 10 that I'd really want to see. I guess the one, and I know I've talked about it a lot in the past couple of weeks, but I really want to see Penn State just because I want to see the impact of that offensive line and how much different they can look with the year of experience underneath their belt. I mean, they were just awful a season ago, giving up 44 sacks on Christian Hackenberg. So I think that might be one of the most improved teams in college football next year if the offensive line can put the pieces together. They've got a lot of nice talent surrounding them, a wide receiver and running back, and I think that obviously with Hackenberg, one of the top quarterbacks, I think they would be a really fun, interesting group to watch. Obviously, you'd see them develop a little bit more.
throughout the season on the offensive line, but that would be the one team. And then I'd also like to see Arkansas, just because we've had to bring them up on every Today's You podcast, and just wouldn't be a Wednesday night if we didn't mention them.
Exactly. Thanks for getting the Razorbacks in there. Steven, if you go anywhere in the country, where are you going for the spring game?
If I'm sticking in the SEC, the one team that I think everyone needs to look out for, and, you know, being in the SEC East and being a bitter rival, I have to give them some credit, is the University of Tennessee. They're really building something nice there. Butch Jones got a lot of young talent that played and got valuable experience last year. They have a bunch of guys that can get after the passer, and Derek Barnett, Curtis Majid. On offense, Josh Dobbs is really talented, dual threat type of player. You got Jalen Hurd as a sophomore running back, very talented. Marquez North, I mean, they're a team that I think in the SEC East is pretty open right now. You know, Florida, South Carolina, they've all kind of slipped off. Georgia is, you know, always in contention, but there always seems to be a big game that they lose. So I think Butch Jones and Tennessee, that's a team that I really want to see if they can live up to the hype, because a lot of people around here think that they're a legitimate team to watch in the SEC East.
All right, well, that's just a little teaser for what we'll be doing next week on the podcast. Going to do a spring practice crash course. Thank you guys for doing the Stay or Go NFL Draft version of that this week. Appreciate it. And you can read Steven and Dustin on Today's You multiple times a week. Steven is at Steven P. Sheehan, and Dustin is at Sharp_Shooter. That's SCHUTTER. Thanks, guys, and have a good one.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks, Colin.